provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frannis, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about private equity in CW3637. Frannis specializes in B2B market research for private equity teams to drive portfolio performance and value creation.
Welcome to the deep dive.
This deep dive is really custom tailored for you, especially if you're navigating the dynamic world of M&A, private equity, venture capital, or consulting.
Yeah, definitely.
Our mission today, well, it's to unpack the most important private equity insights from calendar weeks 36 and 37, curated directly from the pulse of LinkedIn.
We'll be looking at how PE firms are, you know, redefining value creation, where the deal flow is happening, what's driving liquidity.
And the growing influence of AI, too, among other critical trends.
Exactly.
Get ready to shortcut your way to being well-informed on what's truly shaping the private equity landscape right now.
Okay.
Okay, let's unpack our first theme. Redefining value creation and operating excellence.
Right.
Our sources suggest the old private equity playbook, you know, relying heavily on financial engineering, it's definitely fading.
Seems that way.
The focus is shifting dramatically to operational excellence and real value creation, with CEOs expected to lead this charge.
That's a profound shift. And Dan Kremens really drives it home. He emphasizes that inexperienced PE CEOs should actively initiate value creation planning, not just, you know, wait for instructions.
Play proactive.
Exactly. And building on that, Dr. Mark P. Bielitsa advises a laser focus. Distill value creation plans down to just three key priorities.
Just
three. Avoids that overloaded laundry list and ensures measurable results. It's especially key, he says, for companies transitioning from founder-led to PE-backed ownership.
That emphasis on focus makes so much sense. It's about cutting through the noise.
It is.
But even with a clear focus, execution can still be a major challenge, particularly when it comes to leadership roles and how they're structured, right?
Absolutely. Jack Syard highlights that dual-hatting commercial leaders, like CCOs or CROs, often impedes progress.
Dilutes accountability.
Exactly. It dilutes accountability. He advocates instead for a dedicated commercial transformation director to truly accelerate value creation.
A dedicated role. So operational expertise isn't just a nice to have anymore. It's becoming a core differentiator.
Precisely. Suzanne May notes the clear need for new approaches as those traditional strategies wane.
Right.
And Damon Baker, well, he really pulls no punches. He warns of an impending reckoning for PE firms lacking that deep operational experience.
A reckoning. Wow.
Yeah. He bluntly states, financial engineering is not a strategy, and hope is not an operating system.
Strong words. It's a stark reminder that true value has to come from within the business itself. It sounds like the granular details of how value is created are more important than ever before.
They really are. Jay Halloran highlights strategic workforce development as a competitive advantage, particularly in industries like, say, HVAC, for ensuring consistent revenue and growth.
That makes sense.
And Eric Braden reinforces this. He emphasizes that IT, cyber, and even print management should be treated as core value drivers, not mere afterthoughts in acquisitions.
Not just cost centers.
Exactly. Protects EBITDA, that's earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, and ensures smoother integration down the line.
It's clear operational depth is critical for building value and protecting EBITDA. But ultimately, all this hard work is geared towards a successful exit. So what did our sources reveal about positioning a company for that crucial next step in today's market?
That's right. Christopher Jones advises founders to really think like buyers.
Put themselves in their shoes.
Exactly. PE firms acquire businesses they believe they can scale, focusing on predictability and structure to achieve a premium valuation.
Predictability and structure. Okay.
And Christoph Jost also emphasizes that founders often seek PE investors for new input, experience, and, importantly, valuable pushback to achieve those significant exits.
Constructive challenge.
Right. And Lu Ji points out hidden millions often lurking in PE portfolios. He stresses treasury optimization to release trapped cash and reduce cost.
Finding cash under the cushions.
Sort of. And that can make a decisive difference to free cash flow and, ultimately, exit multiples. It's about looking in every corner for value.
And for new CEOs stepping into these high-pressure post-acquisition roles, what kind of support do they need to navigate those intense expectations? It must be immense.
Immense pressure. Andy Stinn suggests that new CEOs benefit greatly from independent advisors crucially, not from the PE firm itself, to provide objective guidance.
An outside perspective.
Yes. And Josie Antonis's post shows a busy summer for PE value creation, with strong revenue and new deals for critical leadership hires. It reflects this ongoing need for external support and expertise in portfolio companies.
So summarizing this theme then, the overarching message from Ricardo Fasani and others seems to be that human capital levers and digital transformation are now core routes to returns and successful exits.
Absolutely. And Michael M. Landman Carney offers a really detailed CFO's playbook for that first week post-acquisition.
The first week. Critical time.
Hugely critical. He emphasizes meticulous financial stabilization, tying out revenue, fixing deferred revenue, building scalable financial infrastructure, all to avoid disaster and ensure sustainable growth. It's truly about setting the foundation right from day one.
Makes sense. Now let's shift from how value is being redefined to where PE firms are actually putting their money to work. Our sources show quite a bit of activity, especially in specific sectors.
Yeah, healthcare, as Ruben Pusher III and Paul Press confirm, remains a significant hotspot.
Still hot.
Definitely. There's a strong focus within that sector on ophthalmology, technology, digital health, and diagnostics.
Specific niches.
Very specific. For example, iSouth Partners acquired Sanvera Group to expand its presence, and Brightstar Capital Partners acquired Analyte Health for digital diagnostics and treatment services.
Interesting to see that specialization within healthcare. What about geographical trends for deal flow? Any particular region standing out?
Well, the DACH mid-market, that's German-speaking countries, showed resilient activity. Yannick Elhag provided a recap of six deals there.
Six deals, okay.
Including Adagia Partners acquiring a leading German planning provider.
Mm.
Germany is even highlighted as a TAP 3 market for deals over $100, proving quite attractive to U.S. investors, despite, you know, some regulatory hurdles.
Interesting. Any other notable specific transactions that caught your attention beyond those?
Absolutely. Sebastian Esser detailed Dreyer Capital from Austria investing in Babiuba.
Baba Yubie.
Yeah, it's a children's fashion brand with a strong online community. And Alan Colton discussed Blackstone's acquisition of Citrin Cooperman from New Mountain Capital.
The accounting firm deal.
That's the one. A landmark first major flip of a PE-owned accounting firm. It signals a pretty significant shift in that industry landscape.
Definitely one to watch. So beyond healthcare and DACH, is the activity diversified across other areas? Or are we seeing a heavy concentration?
No, it seems pretty diversified. Paul Press's overview confirms activity across infrastructure, tech, insurance, and digital services.
A broad spread.
Yeah. DBAG, for example, acquired German digital consultant Mate. And Greg Head notes that growth equity and PE are still highly active in software acquisitions.
Still buying software.
Oh, yes. Often buying established SaaS companies with happy customers and efficient business models, even if they don't have, you know, flashy AI features yet.
Solid businesses.
Exactly. And Scott Engler also points to carve-outs as the new playbook in what he describes as a massive PE reset.
Carve-outs are back. And what about industries facing unique challenges, like construction? Is private equity playing a role there?
It seems so. David Ponte highlights PE as a potential solution for succession challenges in the construction industry.
The aging workforce issue.
Precisely. An aging workforce and often a lack of viable exit plans. PE firms can provide the cash for purchases and leverage roll-up strategies to create economies of scale, tackle labor issues too. He suggests this trend is expected to continue, given the demographics and the value they see.
Right. Makes sense. Let's turn our attention now to a truly fascinating shift in the market. Liquidity. It seems to be a major theme right now.
Huge theme.
Firms exploring new avenues in secondaries.
Yeah.
Well, they're truly taking center stage, aren't they?
They really are. Ayers Patel confirms this, stating that the secondaries market is evolving beyond just fundraising into strategic platform moves.
More strategic plays.
Definitely. Examples include TA Associates investing in Klein Hill Partners, AXA IM Prime acquiring W Capital, and HIG Capital launching its own secondaries platform.
Building or buying capabilities.
Exactly. It signals a trend towards acquisition over organic build-out for gaining credibility and deal flow in this really competitive space.
That sounds like a proactive approach to what seems like a challenging market. But what's driving this complexity around liquidity? It feels like there are some deeper issues at play.
There are. James LaPushner describes it almost as a crisis in PE.
A crisis.
Yeah, with potentially $3 trillion in unsold deals and distributions down like 50% versus historical norms.
50%, wow.
It's significant. And this is driving complex financial engineering. Harold Berlinick delves into these tactics, citing borrowing against commitments to continuation funds.
Which let existing LPs roll over.
Right, or NAV loans, where firms borrow against their portfolio's net asset value. Berlinick provocatively asks if these sophisticated maneuvers are truly protecting capital or simply postponing the reckoning.
Well, that's a strong phrase, postponing the reckoning. If firms are resorting to these complex financial maneuvers, how transparent is this really for limited partners, the LPs? And what are the long-term implications for investor trust?
That's the core question. And Chris Vieber points to Yale's private equity struggles as underscoring a significant shift in the alternatives landscape.
Even Yale.
He explains that higher capital costs and increasing competition make the traditional playbook just tougher to execute. It demands more discipline and creativity from investors and managers alike to navigate this evolving environment.
More creativity needed. And what about capital allocation from other sources, like private wealth? Is that changing the game?
It certainly seems to be having an impact. Andrea Carnelli-Dombe notes that private wealth channels are recording strong allocations to private credit.
Private credit's hot.
Very. $48 billion committed in H1 2025 in the U.S. alone. However, competition in this space is already compressing returns.
Getting crowded.
A bit. And Ronald Diamond adds that family offices are significantly increasing allocations to private markets, especially private credit and infrastructure. Their ability to commit to long-term strategies is key. They're fundamentally reshaping investment trends and opportunities. Their long-term view is a real differentiator.
It seems like choosing the right type of capital, not just any capital, is more critical than ever for companies looking for funding.
Absolutely critical. Jonathan Maharaj and Alejandro Cremades both highlight the crucial distinction between venture capital and private equity capital.
Different beasts entirely.
Completely. Maharaj's VC versus PE cheat sheet warns founders that money comes stamped with agendas, timelines, and veto rights. He urges them to consider if they'd still take the money if there was no PR about it.
Good gut check.
Right. And Cremades differentiates based on what they fund, mature versus early stage, their primary goals, which are optimize versus innovate, their use of debt, and return expectations.
Yeah.
He reminds us they play by different rules.
Different rules, different expectations. Yogesh Kunal also offered a clear breakdown of how PE firms actually make money, which really helps contextualize these dynamics.
Yes, that was useful. He explains the core revenue streams. Management fees, typically around 2% annually.
The two?
Carried interest, the 20% of profits above, usually an 8% hurdle.
The 20?
And transaction and monitoring fees. But he stresses that what truly separates winners from the rest is value creation.
Back to value creation.
Exactly. Through operational improvements, tech upgrades, strategic add-on acquisitions, he cites KKR and CHI Overhead Doors as a real-world example of four-bike EBITDA growth and significant employee payouts.
Real results.
Right. And Chris Riley then further clarifies the private equity waterfall, how enterprise value gets distributed from debt holders down to preferred equity, then common equity. Clarifies the risk-reward for different capital structures.
Super important context. Given all this market complexity, the financial engineering we talked about, due diligence has to be absolutely paramount, right? It feels like the stakes are higher than ever.
Absolutely paramount. Yuri Larachev presents a, frankly, startling statistic.
Oh.
70% of SaaS deals that fail post-acquisition can trace roots to weak due diligence.
70%. That's huge.
It's massive. He calls for stronger tooling and rigor beyond just, you know, pretty slide decks.
Yeah.
He advocates for bulletproof tool sets with playbooks, benchmarks, real-world operational recommendations for modern consultants. It's a huge indictment of current practices, potentially.
That's a shocking potential failure rate. So what's truly essential to get right from day one to avoid becoming another statistic in that 70%?
Well, Andreas and Andy Rindler reinforces that technical due diligence is mission critical.
Exactly.
Mission critical for unlocking value and avoiding costly surprises, especially with shorter deal timelines and these increasingly complex tech environments.
No time for mistakes.
None. He stresses identifying hidden risks and opportunities early on. And Eric Bollinger's Private Capital Compass also highlights that modernizing due diligence is becoming a real competitive advantage for forward-thinking funds.
A differentiator.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Emphasizing that integration planning, especially for IT and cybersecurity, needs to be a day one priority, not some afterthought.
Okay, day one. Now, something that's really emerging as a game changer across the PE landscape, moving maybe from rhetoric to practical adoption, is the AI and data revolution.
Yes, this is a big one. Patricia Horatan highlights the proprietary data channels and AI scalability are becoming magnets for strategic capital.
Magnets for capital.
Yeah. She emphasizes structuring every move for data synergy and AI scalability, treating content not just as documents, but as data points enriched by specialized tags. It's about building that defensible data infrastructure from the ground up.
So firms are actively adopting AI, both internally and within their portfolio companies, or is there maybe a disconnect between ambition and reality here?
There seems to be a nuanced picture. Gavin Geminger points out that PE firms are actually lagging. They're behind portfolio companies in AI adoption.
Really? The firms themselves are behind?
Apparently. While nearly 80% use AI or generative AI in some capacity, only 28% report it's driving material performance.
28%? That's low.
It is. Execution and operating model design seem to be significant barriers. So adoption is there, but tangible impact is still proving a challenge for many.
That's a substantial gap.
Yeah.
What does pragmatic implementation look like then to bridge that divide between using it and getting real value?
Well, Paul Barron notes that many PE firms are aggressively implementing generative AI now for both portfolio companies and their own internal workflows.
Trying to catch up.
Seems like it. Timo Carey adds that most firms are still working through basic usage and, crucially, trust issues. Only a select few are truly scaling AI impact yet.
Trust is key.
Absolutely. And Karsten W. argues that traditional static business intelligence dashboards are effectively dying.
Dying, strong word.
Yeah. He advocates for data and AI-enabled value orchestration with adaptive, predictive, key performance indicators, KPIs, and agentic AI meshes.
Agentic AI meshes. Explain that a bit.
Essentially, networks of AI agents collaborating to achieve complex goals. The idea is to drive real-time action and potentially unlock 20-30% productivity gains.
So moving beyond just reporting to actively driving measurable outcomes, that's a big shift.
Precisely. Andy Sharma explains how technology from AI to cybersecurity and digital transformation is accelerating enterprise value creation through efficiency, productivity gains, and improved exit readiness.
It touches everything.
It does this. Kurt Yang mentions that family offices and PE firms are embracing AI for efficiency, growth, and transforming that unstructured, often messy data into a structured second brain for AI agents.
A second brain. I like that.
Yeah. And Jack Dennison also shares successful AI transformations through real-world case studies from organizations like EQT Group and Decathlon, showing what's actually working on the ground.
Good to see concrete examples. It sounds like industry solution providers are also jumping into this space with innovative tools, right?
They certainly are. Sally Moore shared that S&P Global introduced new solutions specifically for private markets.
S&P Global.
Yeah, including a partnership with Maestro for enhanced portfolio monitoring and something called iLevel Document Search.
What does that do?
It's an innovative Gen AI capability that transforms how private markets investors surface portfolio intelligence. Using natural language queries on board decks, financials, fund documents, basically asking questions in plain English.
Very cool. Makes sense.
And John Guerrieri also highlighted the growing impact of generative AI shaping strategy, talent, and scale across the whole private equity industry.
It's definitely a recurring theme. Now, given that critical shift we discussed earlier to operational value creation, talent and leadership must be more important than ever. It's not just about the numbers, but the people driving them.
Absolutely fundamental. Lucas Bettel outlines 7 trends shaping executive search in PE for 2025. He emphasizes precision leadership.
Precision leadership.
Yeah, meaning a focus on operators who deliver value fast, have deep sector expertise, and crucially, pre-deal talent integration to reduce risk. He states quite clearly, being a generalist is no longer enough.
Specialization is key.
It seems so. It's a call for highly specialized, impactful leaders tailored to the PE context.
So it's about finding the right kind of leader, tailored specifically to the PE environment and its unique demands.
Exactly. Rashmi Vittal explores why PE firms actually offer more CEO opportunities for GTM, that's go-to-market operators, than venture capital does.
Interesting. Why is that?
She notes these operators are uniquely positioned to take the reins, likely due to their focus on measurable growth and scaling. And Bjorn Henriksen highlights the indispensability of executive interim managers for portfolio companies.
Interim managers.
Yes, bringing that investor-grade perspective, delivering fast, measurable impact, and providing continuity during critical transitions.
Filling crucial gaps.
Precise.
And what about the internal structures and culture of PE itself and how that influences talent? Are we seeing any shifts there, maybe discussions about it?
There are some interesting critiques. Lee McCabe provocatively critiques LinkedIn itself for being saturated with performative archetypes.
Performative archetypes?
Yeah, arguing the platform needs more operators and authentic value creators rather than just influencers, especially in this space.
An interesting point.
And James Ransom discusses a growing trend. Internal consulting teams within PE funds, or large corporates spinning out as independent consultancies, like D's Plus and Liberty Advisor Group.
Leveraging their internal expertise externally.
Exactly. Using their deep expertise and credibility built inside for external clients. And Matt Lane also published a white paper on human capital levers for value creation, highlighting the significant impacts operating partners focused specifically on human capital can have.
The people side of value creation. Okay, zooming out a bit for our final theme, what are some of the broader shifts and trends shaping the private equity market right now? Beyond the internal dynamics, what's the bigger picture our sources pointed to?
Well, Guillermo Isaac Rodriguez Tejedor references Bain & Company's 2025 mid-year report. It paints a picture of a sector in transition.
Transition how?
Record levels of unrealized value sitting in portfolios and shifting fundraising patterns. And David Harmeyer points to CB Insights data showing a high concentration of valuable private companies.
Concentrated where?
Mainly the U.S. and China. They dominate the global unicorn landscape, representing 86% of the top 50 companies globally. And significantly, 40% of those are AI companies.
86% U.S.-China, 40% AI. That's a significant concentration of innovation and value.
It really is.
Any other areas of opportunity or focus that emerge from the sources, perhaps looking forward?
Yes, Antonio Vizcaya Abdo highlights a significant opportunity for PE in climate adaptation investments.
Climate adaptation, not just mitigation.
Exactly. He notes that damages from climate change are already surpassing mitigation costs. He projects adaptation needs at $500 billion to $1.3 trillion annually by 2030.
Huge number.
Massive numbers, with a huge investment gap currently. This represents both a financial and, frankly, a societal opportunity, focusing on themes like resilient building materials, flood defense, water efficiency. It's a growing area with clear, undeniable demand.
Very forward-looking indeed. And what about for firms looking to enhance their own value and position in the market? What strategies are coming to the forefront there?
Calvin Kreutz reported on a webinar that discussed strategies for driving multiple expansion in private equity.
Always the goal.
Through smart sector choice and improving pricing strategies, alongside, of course, strengthening that core EBITDA performance. And Lorenz Jungling and Steve Budd highlighted upcoming industry events.
Networking and learning.
Right. Like the Private Equity Insights Conference in Munich and an AI Strategy Day in London. It reflects the community's strong emphasis on AI and operating value right now.
AI and ops again.
Exactly. And Andrew Stitton also shared Mason Advisory's specialization in technology services specifically for private equity, aimed at maximizing value and mitigating risks throughout the transaction process. Underscoring, again, tech's pervasive role.
That was a tremendous deep dive into the private equity landscape from calendar weeks 36 and 37. We've covered, well, everything from the renewed focus on operational excellence to the surge in secondaries and the transformative power of AI.
And we really hope you've gained some valuable insights into the strategies, the challenges, and the opportunities shaping the market right now, helping you stay ahead.
If you enjoyed this deep dive, new deep dives drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on venture capital, M&A, and strategy and consulting.
Thank you for joining us.
And make sure to subscribe so you don't miss our next deep dive, and maybe consider this. If hope is not an operating system, as Damon Baker put it, what truly is the long-term operating system that will safeguard PE's future returns in a world increasingly driven by data, complacent liquidity, and the need for genuine operational value? Something to think about.